Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Good
on
106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and Mr. Dave North Martino is back.
My full name!
Yeah, I'm being polite, I told you. It's back week on, week off. It's like wax on, wax off.
Right? The off weeks are the worst, though, then.
Yeah, well, I mean, just remember that next week.
Yeah, you just next week.
Yeah, next week, call it
oh,
sick.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's time to be.
I'm going to.
Yeah, you're going to be. You know, it's not you, it's me. I tell you. Well, you know, and it's funny, you know, we should have this. I see like how Uber now and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They get to rate the passengers now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
You can give your passenger 1 star.
Huh. Right?
We need to start rating our listeners.
Be nice, Al. Be nice.
Well, think about it. They get to say and do all this stuff and type in and write and
yeah.
1 star me or 5 star, whatever. Now, wouldn't it be nice if I could do that back and they had their profile set up and you could say, well, you know, they're a terrible listener. I'm just saying.
You know. You're a futurist.
I'm so much in the future. You know, but I'm too old to get there, so I won't be there. But I'm giving people ideas. Make your life better and just follow my advice and you'll be there.
That's right.
Anyway, well, speaking of that now, so we've got a writer on and, you know, he used to be a dentist. And it's funny because there's that dentist all over the news, the guy that poisoned his wife. So, you know, I can see why he's writing more of a, you know, mystery and stuff and crime and stuff. It fits. Anyway, yeah. So Mr. Peter Thomas Ponce, thank you for being here.
Thank you. And maybe I should correct you right off the bat. I'm not a dentist. I was a dental technologist and I owned a dental supply company, but I'm retired now. So I'm 10 years away from that. So
now let's talk about where you came from, who you were. You were in that industry for quite a while. What made you get into writing? Like, what made you decide to write a book?
Okay, first of all, I decided that it could be a good idea as I needed to leave something behind, I thought. And legacy would be a great idea, and a literary one wouldn't hurt. Going back, in my marketing part of our business, I started with a newsletter, and I found it really successful because I had put my picture on the front of it and my bio, and then every month I would send them out to all my customers across Canada. And when I walked in the door, they recognized me. It was kind of cool. I started writing a lot more of these journals into the journals, the dental journals, and these articles started helping us promote our business because we put an ad in one side and an article in the other. So the dental journals were really helpful in the marketing part of our business. And when I finally sold the business, 10 years ago, the same day I had found out there was a writing workshop at the library in the local town. And I told my wife, I'm going. She said, darn it, you just signed the paper. The ink is still wet. And you want to go write? I said, yeah. So that's the kind of thing that kind of spurred me. I just wanted to change the way I was writing, but I always wanted to write because I had been encouraged by other people to get the creativity out. See, as a dental technologist, I sat at the desk making all kinds of dental prostheses. So my hands were always busy. My mind was always busy. But it's not the same thing when your hands get idle. So sitting around for a while, I thought, I better do something. And this is what I decided to do. And actually, I've been having a lot of fun doing it.
Well, I bet, you know, because you can get a lot of your creativity out there then, right? You're not stuck. So what made you go to, like, this is kind of a crime, a mystery. Is that sort of what you like to read yourself?
I do, yeah. One of the first articles of authors that I really fell in love with Clive Cussler. And I got most of his books here. And I really enjoyed his stuff. The writing style wasn't the kind of thing you would get from, you know, if you got something like a Booker Prize or a Gilbert Prize writer. He wasn't like that. He was writing adventure. He was writing stuff you could read and be entertained. And he was really good at it because the public loved him. I mean, he made so many books. He wrote so many books. But that was where I started. I thought I'd do an adventure story. And this one that I've got is just packed full of stuff like that. I've got so many different scenes, so many different action scenes and whatnot. But yeah, that's one of the guys I read. And Baldacci, David Silva, Lee Child. I love his stuff too. You know, I like Jack Reacher. He's really cool.
Well, what was the transition like going from writing articles to creative fiction? Did you find that difficult, or was that an easy bridge?
Yeah, I don't think it was so easy. The only thing that was really easy was the research, because I'd done so much research with the dental articles that I wrote. And a lot of them were almost like papers, because I had references at the bottom from some of the references I used from different books to support my thesis on the work that I did. So that transformation was good. I mean, you could find the research, because it was the most difficult part to do. But I think the transition that I found was not that easy, was getting the characters and the plots and the storyline. But when you find something can spur you into creating, which I got when I got that book called 1421, from a friend of mine. That book is from Velika Menzies. I got an idea there, and that kind of, you know, I think I can write something along that line. I think I can do something that Clive Cussler did, and why not I just give it a shot? What have I got to lose? So I sat down and I started doing it.
That's interesting. So how did you start this? How did you attack this? Did you have your main characters first, like the William Fox and Patrick Riley? Did you have that already created, or did you have a storyline first or setting? Like, how did it begin?
Okay, William Fox, I created when I was on Pelee Island. Don't know if you're familiar with that. Some people know where it is, some people don't. Just for the sake of geography, I'm going to tell your listeners that it is an island in Lake Erie, and it's halfway between Canada and the United States. You could say it's almost opposite Rochester. And during the Prohibition days, the gangsters used to be on that island helping, getting the booze across from Canada to the United States, the place where Al Capone and the Purple Gang used to hang out. Now, I went there one time for a vacation. I spent some time at a cottage, and they have a museum there. It's really interesting because it's got all the local stories there. And one of the stories that I felt was fascinating was about this runner. He had a beautiful Chris Craft wooden boat. And it was really souped up. He used to run that boat across to Rochester. He got a real reputation, so much so that the American Coast Guard was after them. So one night when he was out, they rammed his boat and broke it in half. Now, that I found kind of interesting because the name of the boat was called the Midnight Fox. And so I used that as a storyline in my latest book, William Fox. Is the character. Now, he also has a cigarette boat called the Midnight Fox. So that's one of the things that I kind of took from one of my experiences. So, in fact, a lot of times you'll get your ideas like that. I think you've talked to a lot of authors, Ellen, so you know that, you know that these guys and folks, these women, men who write, they get their ideas from a lot of different sources.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's different. Yeah, everyone's a little different. It's how they get their creativity or whatever. Get some going, you know. And how do you attack one of your characters? How do you create them? And are you one of those authors that sees their characters, or they become real and you kind of have conversations with them and the whole thing, or is this something that is different for you?
I don't think it's much different than what a lot of other authors do, because I've got spurned by I got my creative juices going when I've read some of these characters and some of their flaws and whatnot. But what I use is a template. It's called a character arc template. And basically I put down their height, their eyes, the colors of their bodies, their education, even right down to their horoscope signs and what they like to wear, what they say. Sometimes some of them have certain cues that they always say during their conversations. So I try to build as much as I possibly can in that regard. And then I try to apply that to certain characters and some of their flaws and whatever. But that's where the beginning is. And then sometimes while you're writing, as you're interacting with other characters, they can actually change where you might want to add something or take something away. So there's where your character development begins, at least with me anyhow. Like I'm working on one right now for my second novel. And at first I thought he was just going to be a transitory, you know, person, just, you know, in and out of the scene. But now he started to develop some character. And I thought, okay, well, he's starting to interest me, so maybe I better add some character parts to him, like, you know, how big he is, what he's wearing and whatnot. So I spent more time developing him, because now as he's interacting with William Fox, he's going to be starting to have some human characters, right? So, yeah, and in a way, it all develops.
And so how much of yourself do you think you put in these characters?
Some, but I wouldn't put all of them in there because I wouldn't say I'm flawless, but my flaws are completely different than some of the people that are in my books. There are some things that I use because they're close and they're easy and they're comfortable, because you know, William Fox has a few things that I have that I like. I mean, primarily some of the foods we eat, some of the booze we drink, or things like that. But I do well with my relationships with women, but William has had some problems with his. So there's some differences. I wouldn't say I'm close to my characters in that regard, but I find that I'll see something from someone and I might put it down and say, well, you know, this is an interesting person. I like them. They're great, good company, but there's something there that I could use. And so I might just jot it down and add it to a cup. So the composites, these characters are composites, and they can have all kinds of different ideas. And they can have all different kinds of composition depending on how they fit into the story. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with your dialogue and crafting dialogue, do you have an inner monologue? Can you hear your characters? Is that how you create dialogue, or have you found some other way?
That's a good question. I never really thought of it that in that particular way. It's difficult to do good dialogue and make it make sense. Because when we talk, we go hum and aha, and, you know, we stop and we think, and, you know, maybe we raise our hands or something. So that is very difficult to put in a book. So a little bit of it is contrived to make it work a little better. So that's the way I work. I try to make it sound like it's realistic, but it can't be totally realistic, because it would just be more, it'll be jumbled.
Right.
And I'm sure, you know, a lot of authors have their own particular way of doing it. But in the end, it's got to sound realistic. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, every author's different, you know. You hear all sorts of stuff. Now you've got a lot of history. Like, you really have done the research. How long does it take you to get through that? Like, when you're talking about the China connection and the Communist Party and all that stuff, that must have taken you quite a while to get all of that together in your mind in order to use that in the story.
Yes, and there was it took quite a long time to get that organized, and, of course, well, I had to throw a lot of it out because it was just exposition, well, actually info dump, as they say. And no one wants to see too much of that. It's not a history book, but I did want to have something that was going to make some sort of sense so that you get a background of the story. And in this particular instance, it has to do with Jeffrey Jordan, Tracy's father, who did something in this past that's trying to catch up to him. And that's all I'll give at that stage. But the point is that, you know, in order for me to do that backstory, I had to give a lot of information. And so while I was at it, I thought I might make a little bit of a political statement too.
You have to be careful there, hey? These days. Well, yeah, you just never know, right? You have to draw the line and kind of decide on how much you want to give away about politics, because it seems like people are so intense nowadays.
Yeah, it's true, but the thing is, the message should be, to me, you should have a message of some sort. I mean, it's not necessary to just make a wonderful story. And sometimes a lot of authors don't want to leave anything behind. They just want to entertain. But for me, I have a little passion about democracy. I like it. I don't like totalitarian governments, and I don't like what's going on in the world right now. So if I say to myself, I'm going to say, like, I might put something into the book that just might show people that, you know, wake up, take a look. Maybe there's something you're missing here, because you may be, you know. And that's all I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to make a big political statement.
Yeah. No, and of course, I'm totally open to it. I think that's fine. I think people should be able to be honest. It's not a big deal. It's just nowadays online, you know, you can say something and people can be really upset. You know, everyone has such different points of views. Do you take into account that? Are you a little bit, are you trying to be sensitive when you write, let's say, violence on the page or something like that, when there's something going on? Do you consciously think about how you're going to present something like that?
I have done some soul searching. I don't know so much about the violence because, we see enough of that on television every day. So I think a lot of us are pretty immune to that. And if it adds to the story, I'll leave it. But one of the things I have come across recently is, the protagonist had an Indian motorcycle. And there was also, I believe, a yellow one from 1948 in the Smithsonian Indian Museum. And as I passed that, I wrote it up because I thought it was an integral part of the story. And as I wrote it up, my editor was talking to me and said, Peter, you know, you're not being sensitive enough here. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, this is what we consider cultural misappropriation. And I said, well, I've never come across that before. Just a story. Well, no, I think people are getting more sensitive. So I said, okay, then let's just take it out and I'll just change the motorcycle to something else. I mean, the last thing I want to do is cause any waves. But, in my journeys, I found out now there is, a lot of publishers who do have sensitivity readers who are reading and making sure that a lot of, the books are cleaned up and censored before they get out because they don't want to offend anybody.
So what do you think about that? Is that something that, Did it bother you to take the Indian name from the motorbike and change it to another brand? Does that bother you or is that fine? Doesn't matter.
No, I let it go because I thought she had a good point. And although the other day I was driving by this small town and there was a big billboard out there with the Indian bike on it. I mean, they're still selling it. We've seen a lot of sports clubs change their names because they realize that it's a sensitive nature. I think you'll see more and more authors thinking about what they're putting down because I don't think they want to offend people. This wokeness that we're walking through right now in our generation, in our culture, is affecting a lot of the things we're doing. So if you want to feel and be sensitive to what's going on, then I think we should be doing some of it, but I'm kind of also concerned about censorship too, because if you do stop saying what you feel, and I don't know if that's really a good thing either. I mean, we built our governments on free speech. So somewhere along the line, there's something has to give.
No, and I agree with that. I think you should be able to say what you want, but it's kind of weird. As long as government or control agencies don't start censoring or changing things, like if Indian Bike wants to change their name to a different name, I think that's great. That's their own choice. But if someone's making them do it, I'm not really a fan of it. You know, I think that's kind of where I draw the line right now. I might change.
Well, you got a point because I think that people should, or corporations should change because they want to. Not because they're forced to do that.
Yeah, they should want, if people in society in general don't like them using that name, if they want to keep and stay in business, then they should sort of kind of do something about it. I think that's their choice. If they want to be in business, you know, that's kind of what you do. But, I don't like seeing them being forced to change, you know. It's kind of weird. It's really a weird time right now for stuff like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have to tread quite carefully on how things are. I mean, I was in business for quite a long time, and my last business was 23 years. To be good corporate citizens, you do have to do things to enhance your image. And if that means being changing the way you do business to help make your customers feel happy that you're dealing with you. That's what you do.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's a good policy. So where do you want to go with this? Like, you've written this book, and it sounds like you're kind of working on another one now. Are you planning on a full series, like 10, 12 books? Do you have that kind of all in your head now, or are you just kind of going with it?
Right now, I've given myself a goal of 5. I'm going to try to do one every year for the next 4 years and see where that takes me. And then I'm just going to take a, lift my head up from my computer and say, okay, where to next? But hopefully I'll have 4 by then. And if there's anything left in there on William Fox, if he can continue, I'll continue. And after all, Louise Penny's got this Gamache character, and he's around. He's been around for a long time. And she's, 17 books now, I think. So, yeah. So I'll stop when my fans or my readers say, that's enough.
Well, I mean, so how do you keep track of Fox and the changes and all the different things throughout? Because, I mean, when you write, let's say if you get up to 17 books, that character can have quite a bit of growth or quite a few things happen, and he's going to change. But is there some sort of way you keep track of this, or are you going to keep track of this?
Well, I heard something the other day that really intrigued me. Someone mentioned something about a Bible. And I mentioned that to my wife, who also helps me with my administration and all that sort of stuff. And she said, you know, we should start one. And I think it's a great idea, because I don't know if anybody could keep all those things together. I mean, I found myself in my first book just finding so many things that I had missed. Like, one day, maybe 2 days, you didn't write. You might write something else, like, brown eyes instead of blue eyes. Well, this is just going to be edited out afterwards, but you can make it a lot easier if you don't do that in the fourth book. So, you need something like that. Yeah. So I think the idea of having a Bible or some sort of book that has all these things in it will help you take your character through their lifetime.
Oh, yeah. I think it's super important because, when you get, 4 or 5 books down the road, there'll be questions that come up, and you'll have to keep going back and trying to remember, or going back in your manuscripts, kind of go, little things, what they drive, what they drink, what they, there's a lot. Yeah. Keeping track in a Bible like that. And I think there's a program too. Isn't there a program people use, Dave? Don't you use Scrivener or something? Or
yeah, I use Scrivener.
Scrivener. Okay. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Apparently that's quite good. I've never done that, because I've never done a series with one character. I make sure they're dead.
Yeah. No. And what are you? You're up to 15 books, are you now?
Who, me?
Or you got more? Yeah.
No, I've got 29.
More? It's 29. Well, okay. I must have missed them.
Oh yeah, I've got 29 out. Yeah. But they're all true stories. Most of them are all true stories. So there's no real chain in them. You know what I mean? It's not like a series, unless it's a series for a type of murder or type of killing that's going on. So, it's but they're tied together loosely, so we don't have carryover. So I don't need to keep track of them. They're dead or in jail, so we don't need to know. It's over. Well, that's interesting. So that's great. So how long did it take you to put together this book and put it out? How long does it take you as a writer?
Okay, this was my first, so it took me a lot longer than it should have.
Right.
Let's see. It took me about 4.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's normal.
And I hear that. I hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to stop for a little bit because I wanted to get back into learning a little bit more about my craft. So at that particular point, halfway through the book, I took a course at the University of Waterloo on advanced fiction writing. And then after I finished that, COVID hit. And then I had, 2 years of just getting down into it, because there wasn't really much else you could do. So, and that's the last 2 years were the quickest. Yeah.
What would you find to be the biggest challenge? Like, why, like when you say you wanted to learn more about the craft, what is it that you're thinking of in your mind at the time? Were you thinking that something about the writing, or what was it that you were looking for?
I think pretty well off, sentence structure, dialogue, and, plot lines. Actually, one of the things I've really had issues with was timelines. When I first wrote this book, I was writing a romantic section where Tracy and William were walking on the Tile Basin in Washington, D.C., underneath the Japanese maples. And there were cherries, pardon me. And the cherry blossoms were on, and I had them like going in there in December. And then they had to turn sod and said, where have you been? You know?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of rewriting, you know, and because once you change that, then you have to change a whole lot of other stuff to make it fit back in together again. So that was, I think, the biggest challenge I've had is timelines, making sure that I have the dates right and the temperatures right, the people are wearing the proper clothes, where they are. And if I take it over a certain amount of period of time, I mean, some books write, you know, a story in a week, some are for years and whatever, you know. But whatever you go through, make sure that all of that stuff kind of fits.
Yeah.
Now, I did, on March 19th, I had my book launch, and I had a Q&A going, and some a lady in the audience was talking to me about a particular author who was talking about flowers growing in December and chipmunks running around. And I said, well, I'm not going to call out that author because that's their editor probably missed that. But the point is that whatever you do, you have to make sure that things like that are absolutely true. Cause you know, you get these questions and you get people saying, well, that's not right. So, you know, even small things, I mean, like even a motorcycle, how you crank it up or down. I mean, like,
right.
If you don't know a motorcycle and you say you're cranking it one way and it's supposed to go the other way, well, you may not be called out. 90 people will read it and won't even think about it. But the guy who knows how to ride a motorcycle is going to say, I'm calling you out on that. So these, even the small things are important.
Yeah. Well, you know, and if they're Canadian, they'll wear shorts in the winter.
or if they're in Costa Rica, they don't wear helmets. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm wondering too, you know, talking about that, talking about weather changes and changes in daylight or it's nighttime. I'm wondering, you know, how you experience writing the story. Do you find it, because I do, I find it's almost like a daydream to me sometimes. And like in a dream, things will just like change. All of a sudden it'll be night when it was just day a second ago. And in the dream, it always seems normal. And it doesn't seem out of the ordinary. But then, you know, when you wake up, you're like, oh, it was day, it was night. And I find that happens to me sometimes when I'm writing, is that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, one chapter is, you know, like you said, it's summer, and then all of a sudden it's winter, and it doesn't jive, and you have to change that. Is that how you experience it, or is it some other way?
I don't know if I can put my finger on it quite like that. I do drift in and out of creativity. I don't know if I would call it a daydream, but I suppose maybe it's true. I never really sat and analyzed it. Yeah, you can, like, in this climate here in Canada, you know, one day it's just snowing. I mean, we do get all the four seasons, right?
Yeah.
The next day it's sunny. Like this morning, I was out for a walk, and now we got flurries happening. So, I mean, yeah, I'm used to change of weather. And sometimes, yeah, I really don't know how to answer that one, except that when I do do it, I try to place my people in a certain part. Like, say, for instance, okay, we're in Montreal. We're heading to Nova Scotia. Are we going to pack our bags with this kind of clothing? Is the weather going to be better there? Or, you know, and we're in the airplane and we see the sunlight in the air, and then we're heading down. We land. It's rainy. It's uncomfortable. You know, we have to put our coats on. So I'm usually transitional. I'm transitioning through, just like it would be in a regular day or regular night, and I work it that way. Like in some instances, one day my protagonist is in Ottawa in Montreal, and then he's flown to Hong Kong. It's a different climate altogether. So we're looking at changes in the weather that way. But in order for me to do that, I actually have to find out what's going on in Hong Kong at the time, and the time of season and whatnot, to make it viable. So about daydreaming, I'm not sure if that would be. Would it be for me? It would just be like thinking, you know, in a kind of esoteric way. And if it comes to me, yes. If it doesn't, then, you know, I put it away till another time. and hopefully it comes to me that way.
Yeah.
Right.
But
well, Dave's drinking whiskey when he's doing his, so.
Yeah.
That's a whole other process.
Yeah. Well, do you drink when you're writing?
No.
No, I don't mean you. I don't mean you, Al. I mean, like, I mean.
No, I don't Dave think he does. I think I'm just giving him a bad time.
Yeah, he's just giving him a bad time.
You shouldn't be drinking when you're writing because, you know, sometimes the next day you look at it and say, what kind of gibberish is that? Yeah. I mean, so,
yeah.
Actually, I don't drink anymore. So I keep, my mind is pretty clear when I'm writing. And I think it's proven itself time over time that, in fact, you know, there was a while back when I was reading Stephen King's book, and in his early days, he used to drink and he did all kinds of stuff. And he threw it all out. He says, you know, I couldn't create after a while because it was just like, you know, you bog your mind down with so much crap. And yeah, you're better off being clear-headed, I think. So that's my philosophy anyways. Yeah. That's my philosophy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then Stephen King, I guess he's a new writer. I don't know. I've heard of him.
Who is that guy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'll have to look him up. I couldn't.
Yeah, this is. The sage with so much wisdom, yeah.
What is your process then? Are you able to, like, do you plan your time? Do you sit there and kind of go, okay, well, this week there's nobody home, or I've got this to do, so I'm going to write 11 to 4 today and 10 to 2 tomorrow. Can you actually sit there and plan it and then turn it on when you need to? Or do you have to be in a certain mood, or does something have to happen? Is there something that, you know... And do you listen to music, or do you? What's your process in writing then?
Okay, my process is when I can get to it. It's that's simple. During the winter months, I have more opportunity to do it because we're up in Canada and it does snow, and there's not much to do up here. I'm not an outdoorsy kind of person when it comes to skiing or snowboarding or anything like that. So I'm in, and that's when I try to write. There are 3 weeks I go to Costa Rica every year to recharge my batteries, and I try to do a little bit there. I was down there just a while back, and I got 3 chapters kind of accomplished. But I'll be doing more here. And basically what it is, the morning routine is get up, make a cup of coffee. Sometimes I bring one to my wife. We sit in bed and shoot the breeze for a bit and then have our breakfast, and I come down. I do as much as I possibly can, and then, you know, life happens. You know, somebody will call or something has to go. We've got to do some groceries to do. You know, I was trying to fit that writing in when you can. I know that now the weather's going to be better. I mean, May's going to be here soon enough, and we're going to be gardening outside. I have about an 8-acre property here, and we do vegetable gardening and flower gardening. And those are our hobbies here. So I find that I'm going to be having to write in the morning and get out there in the afternoon when the weather is warmer and get some of that done. So it's going to be a little restricted, but, sometimes, you know, you sit down and say, I don't have it today, you know, and then you start fooling around on Facebook, or you start looking at YouTube, what's going on, fill out your emails. Now, other times it's just like, it's like the Niagara Falls. You can't stop. It just keeps going. But I do catch up. And I think this year, I'll probably be able to write it. I give myself a deadline by October to have this ready and have it edited by November, and hopefully have it out by next year. So the deadlines should help, because the first time around I didn't have deadlines.
Right.
But yeah. So I realized that if you set your mind to it, like 500 words a day, like, you know, every day, or at least 5 times out of the week, within 28 weeks to 30 weeks, you should have some sort of a manuscript, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. How do you think it's changed you? Now that you've completed a book and had it published in a lot of different ways, I'd imagine. But what do you think the key things are that changed about you?
Well, I'm growing in a lot of ways that I hadn't for a long, long time. And maybe I was getting stagnant for 10 years sitting around because I wasn't doing. In the old days, I spoke to a lot of people and I did seminars. I visited schools and did seminars. And the interaction I had when I had my business was wonderful. And then for 10 years, I just was more or less on hiatus just around here. And now that I'm writing, I'm finding I'm meeting more people, and I'm writing, and I'm getting an opportunity to speak with you and other people like yourself. And I'm finding it's really stimulating and fun. And I'm realizing, yes, I am changing, and it's good, because, you know, you can never stop learning at any age, and you never stop growing and making new friends. And, I feel that's where I'm headed, and I'm realizing that the more I put myself out there, the more people are willing to accept me. And it's been a good transition so far, but it's just still the beginning for me.
Yeah. 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 It's a constant thing. I think the only negative thing is when you look back, you'll look at older books you've done and you'll look at them and you go, oh God, did I write that? I wished I could change that.
Oh.
You know, that's the only thing I find. I try to stay away from older books and it scares me. It scares me when someone pulls out a book or writes something and go, oh, wow, this is a great book. And I'm thinking, oh no, it's terrible. But it's just your own self. You know, it's not real. I mean, it's fine for what it is, but in your mind, you kind of go, oh no, oh, I would have done it so much different today than I would have done it, you know, like say 10 years ago. Like it's just, it's amazing. And I think that's the only negative thing about the growth with it. It's not negative. It's just kind of, ugh, you know, you spend your life rewriting all your books. What makes a good book for you?
What makes a good book? Well, something I can be satisfied with that I can feel comfortable with and say, you know what, I really, really had a good time reading this. I enjoyed the plot, I enjoyed the story, and I enjoyed the camaraderie of the characters. A good ending always helps. Sometimes I like those little twist endings. They kind of like put the little cherry on top of the ice cream, you know. Oh, that was really terrific. Other times, well, you know, I've been reading some Biles. I've got a number of them I want to get my hands on. I'm just waiting for I have a library card and I'm waiting for them to show up. Yeah, so I do a lot of different reading. But mostly it's novels. I like Bosch and I like, a lot of the stuff that's been turned into television shows too. And, what can I say? I read a lot of different stuff and you got to keep an open mind. But yeah, a good book to me, just, you know, got to be satisfactory at the end. You got to just say, you know what, that was really, really great. Cause I like, now that I understand a little more about their writing, I'm learning about how some of these writers write and their different techniques and some of the things that they do and use. And then I say, oh my God, I've never used that before. That's a great idea. And why did he use a sentence like this? And the way that was put together was really beautiful. And oh, I love that description. So it's just like, I'm really appreciating other authors' craft, their handiwork, the way they put things together, the way they make this picture they're developing. It's just wonderful. There's a lot of great, great authors out there. And that to me makes a great book. If I can even learn something from it besides just being entertained, that's even the best. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we do. Even sometimes we don't realize it. Okay. So now are you a big social media guy? Have you got this all set up? Have you got places where readers can find you, like a website? And do you have Facebook or TikTok or dancing and all that? Like where do people find Peter?
Okay. Peter is at peterthomasponsa.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. I don't do the TikTok dance. Oh. And no, that's not my bag. And the books can be found at Apple, Book Nook, Barnes & Noble, Friesen Press, of course, Amazon. They're all there. And locally, they're at the Book Nook in Orangeville, Ontario. Oh, yeah. And also, I think I just got the book has just been accepted in the catalog in the New Tecumseh library system out here in Ontario. So it's in the library as well. And, yeah, that's where they can reach me.
Excellent. Of course, we'll have everything up on our site. People will be able to find you then quite easily when they're listening. And it'll just be one click, and they got Peter. It's right there.
Okay.
You know?
Sounds great.
So what's the next book that you'll have out? Which one are you aiming for? Is it another Fox series in October and be out next year?
Yeah, it's going to be another Fox series, and it'll be a different area. But, you know, we won't have the treasure in this one. There's certainly too many treasures out there now. Yeah. But we're going to, along the same lines, maybe a political thriller, hopefully, a little bit of spycraft. And we'll see where it goes from there. But, you know,
yeah. Oh, good. Did the pandemic affect your writing? Like, did the, you know, the stresses and the tension and people screaming at people and trucker rallies and all this stuff, does the outside world tension interfere in your writing at all, do you think?
Yeah, we were under a lot of stress. I think my family and I were very stressed out about what was going on The fact that we were prisoners in our own homes and prisoners in our own country wasn't good. We weren't happy. Yeah. No, but how it affected my writing, not so much. I didn't really put anything of the pandemic in my book. I didn't have it affect it that way. I wrote around it because I didn't think it was something that people wanted to read again after being through it. It's just, it was to me one of the most horrific events ever, especially for my grandkids.
Yeah.
You know, they were both into sports and they play hockey and soccer and both those things. So you have to be outside in the public. And, you know, I felt sorry for them because they missed a couple of years that would have been really beneficial for their growth. So, but yeah, a lot of us were really ticked off, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Well, I think that in itself might seep into your writing a little bit without you even knowing it. You know what I mean? In the back of your mind, you're kind of feeling one way and you're writing. I don't know. I always throw that out there because you never know. I just, I wonder what it'll look like in, let's say, 10 or 20 years when you look back at stuff and how it would look then, you know. And if you read your book, I wonder if you'll pick up things that you didn't realize, you know. I asked that of myself, too, not just other people. I just don't know, you know.
Well, I know exactly where you're coming from. I mean, like, when I first started writing, the first article I ever wrote was for the Dental Technology Journal. And I still have that article, and I look at it, and I look at myself, and I say, wow, how is that even published? I mean, like, it was trite. But, you know, the thing is, we do grow, and our attitudes change, and our lives change. So, you know, you can't change what you did.
No.
And no one wants to go back. I mean, if somebody offered me to go back, you want to be 18 again? I said, no.
I'll take the 18-year-old body, but yeah. But no, yeah. The rest, no, just forget, you know, but that's, you know, anyway, well, it's been fun. I've really enjoyed having you on the show. Now, of course, your book we're talking about is called Outfoxed. And, of course, the writer's our guest, Peter Thomas Ponsa. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Alan. And you too, Dave.
Thanks, Peter.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.